This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson, visiting Aspen Public Radio in Colorado. See you in court. President Trump tweeted those words back in February when his proposed travel ban was first challenged in court. In the fall, arguments for and against the ban will be heard by the U.S. Supreme Court in October. Until then, parts of the measure are now in effect. People from six majority Muslim countries without what the administration calls a bona fide reason to visit the U.S. will not be allowed in. New instructions from the State Department will take effect tonight at 8 p.m. with further specifications. We'll get into those details as our conversation continues, and we'll consider the legality and morality of this travel ban. Joining us to discuss it, who are also here in town for the Aspen Ideas Festival, is Wajahat Ali, a lawyer, playwright, and opinion writer who regularly contributes to The New York Times. Wajahat, welcome to 1A.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Rabia Chaudhry, an attorney, a national security fellow at the New America Foundation, and the author of Adnan's Story. Rabia, welcome.
Hi, Joshua. Thanks for having me.
We welcome your questions and thoughts also about the travel ban. Email us, 1A@wamu.org. Comment on our Facebook page or tweet us at 1A. Before we dive in, let me give you a few of the details of the travel ban as we know them now, where the administration is issuing new guidelines for visa applicants from the six majority Muslim countries that are affected. Travelers will be allowed to enter the U.S. if they have close family ties, and the administration defines that as parents, children, spouses, parents-in-laws, and sibling. Son-in-law, daughter-in-law also counts. Grandparents do not count. Aunts, uncles, nieces, nephews, cousins, brothers or sisters-in-law, fiancés, none of those count. So the travel ban could put into effect except for people with what the administration calls a bona fide relationship in the U.S. That could also be a tie to a business or to a school, but it wouldn't include something like, say, a hotel reservation. Wajahat Ali, what is your initial reaction to not only the restrictions, but the fact that they are actually taking effect, at least in part?
Some good old bona fide bigotry and stupidity seems pretty ineffective and arbitrary to me. And in my family, we call it the Muslim ban. I don't know about you, Rabia. Too soon?
I think everybody's calling it the Muslim ban.
All right, good. Look, real quick, ineffective, counterproductive, mean-spirited, most likely unconstitutional, and just yet another, if you will, measure of the real motivation behind this, which is catnip for his base, which is unfortunately fueled by white nationalism and fear, a fear against the other. And in two cases, the most feared and loathed groups in America right now are the undocumented and the Muslims. I think it's so silly because it's not going to make us safe at all. ISIS is laughing at this right now because, number one, they're like, this is completely ineffective. You just need someone from an European country, a person who's radicalized in, say, Germany, who will bypass this Muslim ban and come in, if God forbid, if they want to do harm. And number two, and last thing I'll say about this, is it proves their thesis. The West is at war with Islam. See, they hate you.
I should also note that the six countries that are affected by this temporary travel ban are Libya, Syria, Iran, Sudan, Yemen, and Somalia. Rabia Chaudhry, what's your initial take on the ban and its implementation?
I think the implementation is going to cause a lot of havoc. And, you know, right now there isn't clear guidance. And, you know, I practiced immigration law for over a decade. So I understand, like, how arbitrary language can be used in a way by Border Patrol officers, by adjudication officers, by visa, personnel at consulates to deny or grant visas. And because when you have such vague language, it can really be abused. So I really see a lot of havoc happening. I think, you know, imagine this. You have a visa. You know, you've gone through the process. When you already have a visa and you're entering the country, you arrive at the airport having bypassed like all these different measures. You have to meet all these statutory requirements. And now you've got an officer right there at the border saying, show me your bona fide relationships. How does a person prove that? Then that person probably has wrapped up their business back home. Maybe they've sold their house. They have nothing to go back to. They've got their family in tow. It's really going to cause a lot of problems. And you know, I have to echo Wajahat's sentiment that at the base of this is discriminatory intent. I mean, the president made that clear with his comments all through the campaign. Mm-hmm. Courts have relied on his comments. And actually, there's not part of official presidential record, even his tweets, that, you know, this really is a Muslim ban because he says it is.
So, Rabia, I guess that you kind of answered part of my question. is in that what I'm curious about what you anticipate when this case goes before the Supreme Court this fall in October. You mentioned that some of the president's tweets have already been factored into the federal court fight over this. I presume that that means they'll be part of the Supreme Court oral arguments as well, but what else do you expect?
I mean, look, the pretext on part of the state is that this is a national security measure. So they are going to have to, on some level, prove that. You cannot, you know, arbitrarily, like, just deny or discriminate against different countries and people of different nationalities. So they have to actually prove a reason that that can hold up in court. And so they have to show the national security concerns that, you know, would be met by implementing this ban, like, in a more permanent way. It's going to be temporary. By the time the Supreme Court hears it, then I think the 90 days will have passed anyways. And I think they're going to have a real difficult time doing that because there's no evidence to this. There's no evidence to the pretext, right? You know, we know that, like, when you look at terrorist attacks, when you look at other national security concerns, there's no evidence that people from these countries are in any way tied to that or that refugees themselves are a threat.
Yeah, grandparents, bad. Stepdaughter, maybe good. It's so arbitrary and silly. But also what's worrying to me about this is if you look at the three judges, it was Clarence Thomas, Gorsuch, and Alito, who allegedly had no problem with implementing the ban in full. And they saw no, if you will, unconstitutionality with the motivation and intent. And also, we're looking at two things here. Whether or not the Supreme Court will actually look at the animosity or motivation or bias when it comes to unconstitutionality, or also if they're going to look at the statutory, if you will, exceeding of the law of Donald Trump, right? So it's really interesting to see what the Ninth Circuit is going to focus on. And the fact that there's three of the nine justices already have tipped their hat, as an American sitting here in 2017 America, and we as lawyers, I'm a recovering attorney, we still remember the ghost of Korematsu and what happened in World War II.
You mean Fred Korematsu, the Japanese-American who was put into an internment camp and sued the federal government?
And sued the government, Supreme Court case, and the Supreme Court went against him. By the way, that was not overturned, and that's still good opinion. And the fact that we haven't learned from that mistake, but Donald Trump, and people forget this, has actually invoked the internment of Japanese Americans as a positive and almost as a prerequisite for this. And he said, and the last thing I'll say, remember this, people forget, Donald Trump said, hey, look, FDR did this, they named bridges after him. Now they're going to name hotels after Trump.
We're discussing the travel ban with Wajahat Ali, Rabia Chaudhry, and with you. We welcome your questions and thoughts about this, especially if this ban or these new travel policies might affect you or people in your family, in your close circle, maybe a business associate, an academic associate. How are you preparing for the implementation of this measure? Email us 1A at WAMU.org, comment on our Facebook page, or tweet us at 1A. Let me play a brief clip from President Trump, who, as we've said, says that this ban is a matter of national security and a way to curb crimes against Americans by religious extremists. He first signed an executive order to this effect back in January, just a few days after taking office. Listen.
And this is the protection of the nation from foreign terrorist entry into the United States. We all know what that means. Protection of the nation from foreign terrorist entry into the United States. That's big stuff.
That's President Trump speaking after signing the first version of this executive order back in January. Rabia Chaudhry, I wonder if not this travel ban, what do you think would be a smarter way for Americans to think about protecting our national security interests? There is legitimate concern among a lot of people that people who claim to be speaking for in the name of Islam will do us more harm. If not this measure, what would be a smarter way to deal with this?
A smarter way is to look at the data and statistics and to talk to national security experts who almost all agree that this is going to have absolutely no impact on keeping the homeland safe from terror attacks. And, you know, those statistics, the trends show that, like, the greatest threat, domestic threat we're facing really is white nationalists, is a different kind of militia than we're talking about when you're talking about, like, Islamic-inspired terrorism or ISIS-inspired terrorism. At the end of the day, law enforcement has to fight crime the way they always have. They have to follow leads. They have to keep an eye on, you know, they have to look at suspicious activity. They have to follow chatter online, things of that sort. This will actually have no impact on that at all. So it really comes down to just looking at the evidence, and there's just no evidence that this is tied to national security.
And Wajahat, what about the cultural conversation with Americans who do believe that this travel ban, while it may not solve the problem, might at least allow the administration to review the current policies to determine, you know, as the president said on the campaign trail, what the hell is going on. What do you think would be a smarter way for Americans to engage with this issue so that Muslims broadly don't end up getting demonized?
You have to realize that Donald Trump sold a lemon to America, and he sold, if you will, a narrative that I will make you feel safe. Trust in me, I will make you feel safe and give you the illusion of security at the expense of the civil liberties and social fabric of this country. And so what you have to realize is the following. Don't have double standards, have equal standards. Let the label of terrorism actually mean something, apply it equally across the board, because right now it's utterly meaningless. Right now it applies to only Muslim suspects, not white nationalists, and terrorism and national security has been weaponized against the most marginalized of America right now. That includes your Muslim neighbor, your Mexican worker, your family member who looks ethnic and brown. We're all in this together. Do not bait ISIS. Do not help them achieve their agenda of seeing the West as against Islam. Work together, work with communities, listen to one another, and actually come together as a pluralistic beacon for religious freedoms and liberties.
Well, in a moment, speaking of working in communities, I'd be interested in hearing about the kinds of conversations you're having among Muslims in the United States about this ban and maybe the path forward. We'll continue our conversation with Wajahat Ali, with Rabia Chowdhury, and we'll take more of your questions as well. Later in the hour, we'll speak to Colorado's Governor John Hickenlooper, not only about what's going on here in Colorado, but about the GOP healthcare plan and some of his bipartisan efforts to bring that plan down. I'm Joshua Johnson, glad to be with you from Aspen, Colorado. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR. This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. We're discussing the travel ban and what it might mean for Muslims in America with attorney and author Rabia Chowdhury and writer Wajahat Ali, two attendees and two speakers at this year's Aspen Ideas Festival. We're only discussing this for a few more minutes, so we definitely want to hear from you as soon as possible with your questions and your thoughts. Comment on our Facebook page, tweet us at 1A, or email 1A at WAMU.org. Rabia, Wajahat, you're both active in advocacy for Muslim communities in the U.S. Rabia, what kinds of conversations are you hearing from the people in your networks right now? Are people upset? Are people kind of taking a wait-and-see approach? Are people mobilizing? What are you hearing?
Well, I mean, definitely the community is alarmed, but this is not an alarm that is suddenly out of nowhere. I mean, the canaries in the coal mine have been chirping for a long time, and it's taken a long, slow boil to get to here. From 9/11 to now, it's taken a long time to build up enough anti-Muslim sentiment and acceptance of these kinds of ideas that we get to this point. But I will say at the same time, not all is gloom and doom, even though people are very concerned. We're concerned about spikes in hate crimes. And what this means for our children. How do you have these conversations with our children? What is their Muslim identity as an American? Mm-hmm. I will say this, the bright side of this, the silver lining here is the incredible coalition building that's happened mm-hmm. around this issue. The demonstrations happening, airports showing solidarity, all of the different civil rights and civic organizations that suddenly realize, hey, what Muslim Americans have been saying for a long time is actually a real issue. You know, Islamophobia, anti-Muslim bigotry is a real issue. It's law is weaponized against us. And so I think this administration is going to face a lot of litigation going forward. This is not going to be an easy implementation. There are going to be a lot of lawsuits. There's a lot of stakeholders here. And there are a lot of organizations that are willing to put in the time, resources, and effort to help defend our community.
Wajahat, I understand that you have had to figure out how to talk about this with your kids, who are very, very small.
Right. You know, my friend from UC Berkeley said something once this came out. He said, wow, they will never want us here. And that was really disturbing to me because he was born and raised in America, and his worst national security crime was that he wore high tops with khakis. And, you know, it's dark humor here, but that's what the sentiment is to many, that we will always be seen as suspects and threats by virtue of our religious identity. We'll be indicted, convicted, and sentenced by a nameless judge, jury, and executioner for simply being and existing. And what do I tell my two babies who are caramel mocha skinned, have multisyllabic names, are very cute because they look like their mother? Am I going to say, listen, you will always be seen as a suspect, so stay quiet, change your name to Walter or Bob, or Donald, and keep your tail tucked between your legs. But instead, what Rabia said, this has galvanized us, right? So thank you, Donald Trump. You have created a multicultural coalition of the willing. Taco trucks, nasty hombres, nasty women, Muslims, Mexicans, people of good faith, white people, some of our best friends are white people, who are coming together to really define what America means. And I'm going to tell my kids, and I told them, even though they're 3 and 1, I'm going to tell them, you're going to go with audacity. You're going to get the appetizers, the buffet table, the desserts. You're going to get everything. You're going to be the protagonist of the American narrative. And this is key. With your Muslim and American values, your test is the following. Once you become a baller, which you will, inshallah, God willing, your test is to reach your hand across the aisle and see the other minority who is downtrodden and to lift them up as well.
But see, I think there are
that's
a lot of
test.
I think there are a lot of people who supported President Trump who say, look, this whole measure is temporary. America has threats that are emergent. We don't quite have our arms wrapped around them. There seems to be, to people outside, you know, the American Muslim communities, very little harm in saying, let's just slow down for a few months, wrap our heads around this, and then probably reopen the flow of immigration like it was before if there are no problems. I imagine there are a number of Americans who think that a lot of American Muslims are kind of hyperventilating over something that has not happened yet. What would you say to them? Rabia?
This travel ban is a response to a problem that doesn't exist. That's what I would say to them. I say it's absolutely legitimate to be concerned about our national security. Let's make it evidence-based. Where are the security concerns?
Well, but then if the problem doesn't exist, there's no harm in the ban. We pause for a little while, we realize, there was no problem, and then we reopen it.
There's absolutely harm in the ban. You're harming people, families, you're harming businesses, you're harming academic institutions. You are already, our universities are seeing a tremendous drop in international students. Our place in the world is being harmed by this, right? I mean, like, so to say that there's no harm done, it's the signals that are being sent. I mean, even in that clip you played with Donald Trump, when he said, you know what this really means. I mean, that's a dog whistle. Yeah, we do know what it really means, but thanks for showing your hand over and over again, President.
It is a new chapter in the ongoing narrative that Islam hates us, which is exactly what Donald Trump says. It's a new chapter in the ongoing narrative of white nationalism that fear them, the black, the Mexican, the undocumented, the Muslim, the person with ovaries, women. And that's why we should be concerned. And we take President Trump seriously. We're not like Kellyanne Conway. We can't see what's inside his heart. I'm not Ben Carson, a heart surgeon. We take him at his word. He was open to extreme vetting. He is open to a Muslim registry. And in this country, we have had camps. So yes, we take it seriously.
And can I just add, for the last 5 years, I've worked in national security policy, specifically in a field called CVE, which is countering violent extremism. So it's not that I don't take these issues seriously, and I also call our community to take these issues seriously, but this is not solving that problem, period.
Rabia, I wonder if we could speak a little bit about the legal aspect of all this. Dale tweeted, the ban announced in January gave 90 days to evaluate the situation. What have they discovered in the last 5 months? Anything? Have we heard of any progress?
Have you guys? I haven't heard nothing.
Well,
Look. Of the refugees, 750,000 refugees have come here since 9/11. How many have been implicated in a terrorism act? There were only 3 cases. 2 of them, which took place in the country not named America before they came here, and they were removed. Zero Americans were killed in acts of terrorism by refugees since 9/11. And of the 6 Muslim-majority countries, in the past 40 years, 0 Americans have been killed in acts of terrorism by foreign nationals. So what have we heard, Rabia, in the past 40 years?
Well, what we do know is after they announced the ban in January, the administration asked Homeland Security and to come up with a pretext for, like, give us the evidence that will back up this plan.
And they did.
They weren't able to.
But that's what they did, but it contradicted his narrative,
right.
And he rejected it. People forget that.
Yeah. There was a report that was buried.
I wonder how much, if at all, you hear from American Muslims who see at least a little bit of value in the travel ban. I mean, not all communities are monoliths. There is diversity of opinion in every community. How much, if at all, are there in your circles of influence Muslims in America who say, well, maybe this won't be that bad. Maybe we should just kind of let this play out a little bit and see where it goes. Rabia?
Yeah, sure. You're going to have those voices, and I hate to say this is going to sound a little bit obnoxious, but generally they're people who are really uninformed about the system, about how the laws work, about what a slippery slope this is, about like the greater and broader impacts, how something temporary can become something permanent, how this can impact other visa categories. And I will say this, as somebody who worked in immigration for so long, I spent many years trying to get the American Muslim community interested in immigration reform and immigrant rights issues. For some reason, we abdicated that issue. We said, that's a Latino issue.
Yep.
And I said, this is unbelievable, considering like what large percentage of our population is actually immigrant or second generation. And now it's coming back to haunt us because we really didn't take initiative on these issues a long time ago.
They live in privileged cocoons and they think that they will be the safe Muslim and that they will not come after them. And what we've seen time and time again is bigotry does not have nuance. And those who look Muslimy include Sikhs, Hindu Indians, those of Mexican-y heritage, and those with a tan. And so it's ignorance, it's a lack of information, but it's a minority. Slowly but surely, the good thing, again, thank you, Donald Trump, is you have galvanized millions of Americans to become the protagonists of the American narrative.
We're low on time for this conversation, but Wajahat, I wonder what you see across the country in terms of activism and mobilization. There's clearly a tremendous amount of activism against the travel ban, as well as some of the Trump administration's other policies. Are we looking forward to a shift in policy? Is it going to be more of the kind of protested airports that we've seen, more legal advocacy? I hear that a number of legal aid societies are going to be showing up at airports
yep.
to make sure that the policies are followed properly. What are you hearing?
I think you're going to see the true face of America. What happened when the first travel ban dropped, if you remember, is spontaneously, organically, communities from all across America, on the drop of a dime through social media on a weekend, went to airports and welcomed foreigners and said, this is the real face of America. We're going to have lawyers who litigate, and Donald Trump loves litigation. So expect a lot of law courts and cases, and we're going to see new stories, new narratives, new protagonists, civic society, education, teachers, lawyers, people of good faith and goodwill all across America stand up and resist.
And Rabia, could you zoom out a little bit for us in terms of the bigger picture of this legal fight? This travel ban has gotten a ton of attention since basically the day after the inauguration, understandably so. In terms of the legal issues that are affecting Muslims in America today, is this the one biggest? Are there others that people in Muslim communities in the U.S. are also, also paying attention to?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, the reason American Muslims haven't paid a lot of attention to immigration issues is because they've been mostly focused on national security issues. Mm-hmm. So the use of surveillance of, like, you know, problematic police tactics and law enforcement tactics to basically, you know, NCT operations and stuff like that. So national security, counterterrorism, those kinds of things. And, you know, my transition from immigration to national security work happened when, for an entire year, I had all these immigration clients who were being leaned on by federal law enforcement to become informants in the community and spy in the community. So this is how immigration is used, and immigration status is leveraged against people to enforce national security stuff. So the national security conversation never goes away for us, you know, and that's
immigrants,
really...
Immigrants are criminalized. Right after 9/11, the definition of criminal was broadened. So that's why now, so many got deported based on these broadening of criminal statutes and what.
Right, we've had a Muslim registry. We've already had a Muslim registry.
It's called NCRs.
Right, people didn't realize.
13,000 people.
But the second thing is civil rights violations, right? And the third thing is hate crimes. These are like the areas that we're focused on.
I should also just repeat, since these details are beginning to shake out, we'll continue to follow the implementation of these measures. Stay with your NPR member station for more details on this. The latest that we know so far is that as of 8 p.m. Eastern today, the new travel ban executive order will take effect. Visa holders will be allowed to enter the U.S. if they have close family ties, like parents and children, spouses or parents-in-law, siblings. Sons and daughters-in-law would also be included, but not grandparents, aunts, uncles, nieces, nephews, cousins, brothers or sisters-in-law, or people who do not have an academic or a business tie to do business in the United States. Rabia Chaudhry is a National Security Fellow at the New America Foundation, an attorney, and the author of the New York Times bestseller Adnan's Story. Rabia, thanks for talking to us.
Thank you.
And Wajahat Ali is a lawyer, playwright, and op-ed contributor to the New York Times. Wajahat, thank you.
Thanks for inviting two moderate Muslims to NPR.
I'm Joshua Johnson. You're listening to 1A.